You are listening to Rational Faiths, a podcast where we're trying to keep Mormonism weird. I am Brian Kissel.
And I am Brian Dillman.
So, Brian, I wanted to ask you a question. So you went on your mission to Cambodia, right?
Correct.
Okay, so before you went, what were some of your ideas of what Cambodia was like, and then once you got there, how well did those kind of understandings of what it would be like serving a mission in Cambodia and what it was really like, how did those match?
Well, I really had no idea. Like, before I got my call, I didn't know Cambodia existed.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I got my call, and I was like, oh, where is this place? And it's in Southeast Asia. And I went and got the version of the Book of Mormon they had at the time at the distribution center. And the first thought was like, oh, crap. Like, I figured I could learn German or Spanish or something like that. But I looked at this stuff and I'm like, where do I even begin? And so the language kind of scared me. And then the culture, I don't think I had any idea of what the culture was like, how it would be different. I knew it was in Asia. And, you know, they look different than we do and things like that. But I don't think I had any real grasp of what the culture was like compared to here. And then when I got there, it took some time, but I started noticing and I just started being a part of it. There's a lot more deference in general. Like if someone's talking in the hallway and you walk by them, you don't just walk by, you kind of duck your head and kind of go around them. And it's not a caste system, but there's different levels of respect depending on your age that you would, like different words for eating and different words that you would address someone by. You don't just say, hey, you. Yeah. Everyone's got like a title depending on their age relative to yours. And so that was really interesting because in the United States, we don't have anything like that at all. And so it was a whole new world, really.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I had kind of a similar experience where my brother had gone to Brazil as well, but he went somewhere in the north. So it was one of the more stereotypical places. But so I had all of these really strong misconceptions of what Brazil, or at least where I went, which was Curitiba, what that would be like. You know, I was imagining jungle people eating monkeys or something. But when I got there, it was so different. And there were so many, there were a lot of like cultural differences and stuff, but there were also so many similarities, and I really didn't have a great grasp. And I think that's probably true with most places. I think we are fairly egocentric, you know, in especially in our understanding of like the United States, and we kind of don't really pay attention to a lot of other countries or cultures.
Yeah, I think so. I think we either think it's like jungle people eating monkeys, or they're like us.
Or they're like us, exactly.
There's not anything in between, or there's not much in between. It's either totally different or pretty much like us, but they like pork instead of beef or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And in reality, there's so much complexity and so many different things. Yep. So that's kind of to go into what our episode's going to be about today. Margaret Blair Young is beginning a new project. She's just launched her Kickstarter campaign, and trying to raise money to produce this product. But they're creating a film that is based in Africa, and they're kind of dealing with some of these complexities, and kind of in our interview we discuss some of the misconceptions and ignorance that many of us have in regards to Africa, and how this film is going to try to challenge those, but also it's going to be a feature film. So I think it'll be a really interesting way to kind of challenge that. So I'm really excited for that. And let's just go ahead and jump into that. It's actually a panel discussion with a couple individuals, and we introduce them in that section. So let's jump into that. All right. So to begin, I think it would be wonderful to be able to give a little introduction to the panel that we're having today and some of the individuals who are participating. So on the call, we have Russell Stevenson, Margaret Blair Young, and Mukon Ngoy. Sorry if I pronounced that incorrectly. But let's go ahead and start with Margaret. You could give a little introduction to yourself and we'll kind of go from there.
I've been working on Black history in the West for 17 years, but over the last couple of years, my direction has taken me to Africa. I went to the Congo last August, making a movie there called Heart of Africa, and really fell in love with the place. The reputation is a very dangerous place. Recently it's been living up to that reputation, but we have high hopes for its future. I see a generation coming up that want to meet their destiny. It's maybe the richest country on earth in natural resources, and a great generation coming up. Mukon is one. She lives in the States. She came as a refugee, and you'll be fascinated by her story, but strong, peace-loving, good people.
So let's go ahead and introduce Mukon. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, my name is Mukon Ngoy. I was born in the DR Congo, and I left there in 1995 to come to United States as a refugee, political refugee. And I'm a pre-medical student at Utah Valley University, and I'm also a national director for Miss Earth. So I don't know if you've heard of Miss Earth before, but it's the third international biggest beauty pageant in the world. And we promote awareness on issues concerning the environment.
Oh, very cool. And then Russell, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Sure. My name is Russell Stevenson, and I'm in a PhD program in African Studies at Michigan State University. I'm currently working with Dr. Wando Achebe on a dissertation related to the history of Mormonism in eastern Nigeria from the 1940s up until the present day. I've written two books on the history of African American and African populations in Mormonism. The first one is Black Mormon, the Story of Elijah Abels, and the second is For the Cause of Righteousness, A Global History of Blacks and Mormonism. And it's really good to be here with you today, Brian. I'm looking forward to the conversation that we're going to have.
Yeah, absolutely. And Russell, I wanted to, because some of that has to do with exactly what we're talking about, maybe tell a little bit more about your graduate studies as well as some of the projects that you're working on, such as like that you're going to be working on with sex trafficking and some of those things.
Certainly. So in my dissertation, I'm going to be discussing how Nigerian Mormonism developed really in a context that was independent of American Mormon missionary work. And we're not typically used to talking about Mormonism as being something that is divorced from missionary work. We think of Mormonism as essentially a missionary enterprise. You know, Salt Lake City or some American ward sends missionaries to some distant location, and then they kind of cobble together, you know, a group of converts, and that's how it grows. But in the Nigerian context, it actually grew in the face of American Mormon resistance. You know, Salt Lake City kept getting correspondence from Nigerian proselytes in eastern Nigeria saying, hey, we would really like to be part of your church. And church leaders kept saying, no, the time's not right yet. We really don't feel good about sending missionaries at this time because of the priesthood restriction. And this is something that they said amongst themselves, and that they were afraid that Nigerians were just looking for financial resources. Now, a number of things. So church leaders felt that they weren't really in a position to send missionaries because, you know, one, they were afraid that Nigerians were just looking for financial resources. But two, they also felt that because of the priesthood restriction, that maybe the time just wasn't right for the church to flourish in Nigeria. You know, my book, as well as my forthcoming dissertation, they all seek to come to grips with the tensions that defined the Nigerian Mormon experience. Now, you mentioned sex trafficking, and that's true. Over the next several months, I'm going to be starting a major research project on the dynamics and the trade routes of human trafficking within Nigeria. I'll be going to Nigeria this summer. And while I will be doing many oral history interviews on the history of the LDS Church in Nigeria, I will also be doing some work on anti-human trafficking efforts there. So that's going to play a major role in my doctoral studies, because that's such a pressing issue. We, everyone I know is at least somewhat aware of the sex trafficking that's happening in Nigeria. The State Department has deemed Nigeria to be a tier two country when it comes to human trafficking efforts. And that means that that it's a major problem, and that the Nigerian government isn't doing very much to address it. And, I hope to at least take some small steps towards understanding that.
Wonderful. So for today's discussion, the focus is going to be on a new project that Margaret is working on, the Heart of Africa. So we'd like to focus on that. Russell and Mukon, feel free to jump in with any questions during this whole conversation, or any comments or experiences that you want to bring up as well. But Margaret, let's go ahead and start out by talking about the genesis of this particular project and where this is coming from.
My husband and I were in the missionary training center in the French branch and sent a lot of young men to the DR Congo. The white missionaries actually don't go to Kinshasa. They go to Cameroon. The perception is that Kinshasa is too dangerous, that the white missionaries might be kidnapped. So right now, only African missionaries serve there. Anyway, I ended up writing to a whole group of the missionaries who we had had in our MTC group, and then their companions. And one of the companions, Emmy Mbui, had been a revolutionary before becoming a missionary. And I saw a fascinating story as I continued to write him after his mission. And he gave me just remarkable information about the country, about what they had done in the revolutionary school, about his hopes for the future of the Congo. And I was able to attend his wedding. We filmed B-roll and did location scouting last August and got to meet his bride and all of their family. I just fell in love with all of them and started really watching what was happening in the Congo. We're going to be returning in May. We're launching a Kickstarter that's available. People can look at that on our Facebook page, which is Heart of Africa Film.
There's a link in our show notes for this episode as well.
So to return in May, depending on the political stability, we have an alternate plan for filming if the situation remains volatile. We knew that there was a chance of some difficulty because the elections are coming up. And one of the biggest things I realize is how little we know about Africa. When I asked people on Facebook to just give me a one-word reaction, two words, the Congo. And the reactions were Heart of Darkness, which is actually set in the Congo. Jungle, Tarzan, Danger is the most common. But the truth is, people know very, very little about the Congo, about the African continent in general. It's almost a joke that people think it's a country rather than a continent. But that's one of the realities. It's a part of the world that we haven't learned a lot about. Mukon can give you some of her history, personal history, and her father's history. Just some amazing stories. But also, her father is very hopeful that this is the time for the Congo to rise up. I absolutely believe that. I really believe that what we're doing there, the film that we're making, the timing of everything we're going to be doing, helping to open the film industry there. There are some fledgling filmmakers, but no film industry. And the Congo is probably the richest nation on earth. Every mineral and metal and precious jewel you can imagine is found in the Congo. There are all sorts of mines, but the Congolese work in the mines. They don't own the mines. Foreigners have come in and have taken over all of those wonderful resources. So there's great reason to pay a lot of attention to the Congo. I think my personal belief is that it is going to be rising to become a major power in the world.
So you mentioned this illiteracy that so many of us have when it comes to Africa. So through this interview, let's be really basic. So when you're in the beginning, you were talking about revolutionaries. So maybe we could kind of start with there. What are we talking about?
A very basic history. It was, you've got King Leopold II from Belgium, claims Congo as his own, is just a despotic and cruel leader. Millions died under his regime. Then later in the independence movements in Africa, you have Patrice Lumumba, who becomes prime minister and then, sadly, with complicity from the United States, is assassinated and replaced. This is during all of the fear of communism, and they thought he was a communist, and is replaced by a bad ruler, Mobutu, who stays in power for a while, replaced by
Joseph Kabila Sr.
Senior. He dies.
And then his son, he was assassinated.
Right. And then his son, Joseph Kabila, is the current president. His term is supposed to end in 2016. The conflicts you're seeing in the Congo right now are over whether or not it will end. He's been doing a few things to not have it end. And there's been a lot of resistance to that among the people. So that's just in a nutshell, the basic history. The fact that the U.S. was involved in sort of putting in Mobutu and then is also involved in trying to have Kabila not seek the second term. John Kerry, Secretary of State, has had many meetings with Kabila urging him to honor the Constitution that requires that he leave. So if people have not heard of Patrice Lumumba, that actually is a significant bit of illiteracy at the very basic for studying the Congo. If you know Heart of Darkness, but you don't know who Patrice Lumumba is, it's time to do some research.
Yeah, he was very powerful in a way where they tried. The United States really did everything they could to eliminate him just because he wanted Congo. He wanted the people of Congo to be educated of what was going on, to be able to make their own decisions instead of having the United States step in and other countries step in. But I guess the corruption was so far where they didn't want someone like Patrice Lumumba to be able to stop that. So they did everything to eliminate him to keep the corruption going because they don't want the people to be educated. They don't want Congolese people to be educated. So they had to eliminate him very fast.
Very interesting. And just one more thing for those who maybe are very illiterate in this regard, what are some resources that you would point individuals to kind of learn more about this history and these things you're talking about?
You know, a really good book that I would recommend for those who are interested in the early colonial period of the Congo, King Leopold's Ghost by Adam Hochschild. It's a very accessible, popular history that talks about some of the, I would say, genocidal acts that King Leopold's regime was carrying out in the Congo. And it got so bad that Belgium actually stripped the Congo of King Leopold's possession. People don't realize that the Congo, it wasn't a colony in the traditional sense, but that it was King Leopold's personal property throughout much of the late 19th century. And things were so, he was such a humanitarian disaster that Belgium basically implemented a kind of eminent domain due to all the public relations problems that it was causing them.
Yeah, my husband gave me a book for Christmas called The Congo. I'll have to send you a link with the author, but that's what I'm reading now and just thoroughly enjoying. It's beautifully researched, written by a Belgian man who has lived in the Congo as well. So I believe it won some major book awards, but really fine information. So when we talk about Emmy as a revolutionary, Lumumba is a great hero to the revolutionaries. And there's the fact that Mobutu was put into power is one of the big issues. And they're very aware that I asked Emmy about a few mining things, and he said we had two mines. The Congolese had two mines, and they went bankrupt. So the only mines that are working are owned by other countries. And many of the political leaders are paid off by, you know, they allow access to the mines and then get paid off, which is one reason that it's hard to get into a new regime.
Yeah, that makes sense. Wonderful. So thank you so much for that basic history. Mukon, maybe we could jump in a little more into some of your experiences that can shed some more light on this.
I don't have a good memory of the DR Congo. All I remember was just dark, just war. It was just nothing but darkness.
How old were you when you were there?
I moved here when I was 11. So I lived there from when I was born until 11 years old. All I remember is just war and suffering. So I don't really have much to say about my childhood when I was there.
And poverty, selling bread on the streets.
Yeah, it was just war. I was 8 years old. I was supposed to be at school, but I was selling bread on the street, trying to survive to make sure that I don't get shot. It was just bad. It was really bad.
And what happened? What happened? Your parents moved to the States, or?
Yeah. So my father was already in the United States 8 years prior. We arrived to America in 1995 to go to school and to try to get us out. And my mom took care of us to make sure like we were okay. So we were moving, we were moving everywhere. We didn't stay in one place at one time because of my father's political situation with President Mobutu at that time. So we had to move. We couldn't stay in one place for more than a year or two because we had to continue moving so nobody tracks us down. And that's what happened.
And maybe just to clarify a little bit more with that, so nobody tracks you down. Like, is it illegal to leave, or was it the political situation, or what? Maybe clarify that a little.
Yeah, it was the political situation between Mobutu and my father. He came here to United States under his administration to go to school. So, and he was asked to return back to Congo, and my father refused. And that became a problem for Mobutu. The only way to get my father is to execute us, because he knew he had his family still in the Congo. So that's why we had to move. We couldn't even get help from our own relatives because we were worried they might, like, slip by telling people where we are at. So nobody knew where we were at. We couldn't really tell anybody or trust anybody. If we gave them the information of what was going on, they could have turned us in and get us executed. So.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Do either of you have any further questions for Mukon in this regard? Or?
I have lots of questions. I could talk to her all day about these kinds of experiences. I suppose I'm personally curious about Mukon's experiences, you know, becoming part of the American experience, right? Becoming integrated into American life. You know, if you, Mukon, have, you know, faced any difficulties with racial barriers, or with racist comments from Americans, or, you know, or any kind of obstacles that have been placed in your way into experiencing American life.
Okay, so my experience was when we were coming here, I've never seen Caucasian people before. So that was like, wow. And then I've never seen roads being built like it is today, because there's none of that in Congo, you know? And I've never seen lights, just everything. The infrastructure here just blew me away. And then going to school here was a whole different story. When I we started going to elementary school here, people would touch my skin, my hair, and I was questioning. It went on for a long time until my late 20s. People will continue touching my hair without even asking me to touch my hair or my skin. And I'm just like, what is going on? I never understood the racism thing until when I started dating in an interracial relationship with a white guy. And I started experiencing a lot of racial thing from their family. And then in school, I've never known about slavery, so which really hurt me to learn a lot about what went on between black and white, because I didn't get the opportunity to learn that in Kinshasa. I don't think they teach that. So I had to learn a lot of that here. It took me in a different state where I had to get help to understand why all this stuff went on between black and white. So just because I never learned it there. So
that was our experience with the part of our B-roll. In the film, we do have a scene in the slave castle, and part of the filming was to do B-roll at the Elmina castle in Ghana. And we took Steffi and Emmy, the newlyweds, and they had not heard of slavery. Emmy was aware to some degree, but not a huge degree. Steffi had really never heard of it. And it was stunning to them. We did little interviews asking about their reactions, and then also asking about the strength of the women in particular in the Congo. During the wars that Mukon was talking about, the rape culture was appalling. Things are, I believe, getting much better, but there are gender issues. But one of the things that I asked her about was the strength of African women, and even in contrast to some American women. And she said, we have learned to survive with whatever we have. I think Mukon is an example of this, where, you know, selling bread on the streets, having to hide their identities. But here she is, representative of Miss Earth, trying, and that's her goal in that, is to help other Congolese women. She'll have to address that. But I found such strength. I kind of anticipated that it wasn't what I thought. One of the first rituals we went to, and we'll portray this in the film, was a bride price ceremony. And that seems, it is problematic because, the young men usually can't afford the bride price. And the bride price for Steffi was pretty steep, but, it seemed to be totally like that would be a male thing. The family all gets together and decides how much they're going to charge and what objects they will request from the groom for the bride price. But as Steffi entered as the bride, she took full control and went up and gave Emmy a small kiss. And as he went to kiss her, she held up her hand indicating, oh no, I'm in charge now. then finally she went to give him another kiss and he picked her up and swung her around. And then they proceeded with the ceremony. There are some issues of inequality that I think people are working on, but the women I met were just phenomenal. The men as well, but I was particularly drawn to the women. And, this is, you know, with Miss Earth, this is a huge thing of what Macron's doing, is looking at women who want the scholarships and everything involved with Miss Earth, and the obstacles. It's not just that they don't know about slavery. Education is awful in the Congo, in the DR Congo. Steffi said she said, I hate history. All we learn about is Belgium and Napoleon. And I thought, oh my goodness, you are a century behind. Mm-hmm. So that's also a big part. They are so smart. They're so bright. They're so good. This generation coming up, They need the infrastructure. They need the educational support, and they are going to be ready to become a great nation.
Yeah, it just takes a lot of the right people to be able to educate the people of Congo on that. They're way behind, but they'll get there. It's going to take some time.
I agree.
Very good. So I think this would be a good place to let's jump in a little bit more and talk a little bit more about the film. So what exactly is it going to be? Is it a documentary? Is it a historical fictional story? Or maybe you can jump into that.
Yeah, Heart of Africa is a feature piece where I based it on true stories. I had written to all these missionaries and I had all of their emails, 2 years worth of emails from 15 missionaries and their companions. And so created a story of tension between the white and black missionaries, which is real. There are cultural differences and some difficulties in the missionary work. But the bigger effort was not so much to tell a Mormon story as a human story of coming to grips with prejudices on both sides, with misunderstandings, with misconceptions. So we hope to take the audience through that journey as well. We hope to help the audience become familiar with a view of the Congo that is nothing like what they currently have, which is a shadowy dark view, but come away with a sense of the beauty and the promise of the people. And meanwhile, as we film, to train Congolese interns, we have a couple who have already begun making films, even though there's no support. And we're going to be working with them and several others so that we could start the film industry and then let them start telling their own stories. You know, we don't always want to have the people come from the United States to tell the stories of the Congolese.
Yeah,
we want to facilitate their voices so that they are telling us their stories. And we've contacted some remarkably talented young people who nobody's heard of, and we're excited to put them a bit into the spotlight. The story itself is a deeply moving story about life in the Congo, the people, the things that you see. It's funny in parts, really funny in parts, and difficult in parts. We deal with the things that you have to deal with, but we don't portray the Congo as a hopeless place by any means, because we think it is a land of promise, and we're eager to see the political situation change for the better, which I absolutely believe it will.
And, you know, let me interject here and say that I really appreciate Margaret's approach to, interacting with African populations, because, all too often, white Americans, do feel like, we can define the African experience, in a couple words. As she said, it's the heart of darkness, right? It's dark, it's dangerous, et cetera, et cetera. But as the great anthropologist Ferdinand Cornelius said, it's not the job of white commentators to give Africans a voice. It's our job to create a space in which their voices can find full expression. It's our job to set the stage, to give them a place. It's not our job to give them a voice. They already have that. In fact, they've had it for a long time. So I'm deeply appreciative of Margaret's efforts in this regard.
Thanks, Russell.
So important, yeah. As you were saying, so this is a story of a
culture conflict. It's kind of, we have a production team from South Africa that includes Kweku Mandela, Nelson Mandela's son, his grandson. And I was talking to Kweku about the Book of Mormon musical, and he found it deeply offensive, especially because of how the Africans are portrayed. The goal of his group out of Africa is to have Africa depicted as it really is, not a bunch of warriors in the bush, not warlords, but real people living real and often beautiful, but sometimes very challenging lives. So in the Book of Mormon music, albeit it's a satire and, they're not making any effort, they're playing with the stereotypes. Nonetheless, when we've seen the real stereotypes, when we've seen the Tarzan movies and the Bob Hope movies where they go to the Congo and meet natives who are dressed up in feathers and probably cannibals. And we haven't really seen particularly the Congo as it is. I tried to see, what movie can I look at that shows me the Congo? There are documentaries, but they're all about the violence in the Congo, especially the violence a decade ago, during when Mukon had to leave. There are some short films, including one by the young man we're going to be working with, who won an award at Cannes for his film. He got to Paris and got it in the festival. But as far as what I could see, there was the big film called Congo, which I decided I didn't want to see in full. Seeing the trailer was enough because it showed me troops of painted African warriors, total stereotype, man-eating gorillas, complete fiction, but reinforcing the fear fence. As long as we have that fear fence, people are not going to be going to the Congo to see the beautiful country that it is. And there's less motivation for the Congo to progress the way it needs to progress. So that's one of our huge things, is to rip those stereotypes apart. So the Mormon African dynamic is presented by Parker and Stone, and we want to turn that on its head. But then also to just shine a light on a place that people think of as so dark.
American representations of Africa in general, and this obviously includes the Parker and Stone representation. I mean, it's abysmal, right? It's a kind of dark absurdity how badly Americans do at representing Africa in popular culture and literature and film, in any number of avenues of life. And what's ironic about this is, you know, we talk about how, you know, obviously the global leader of film is Hollywood, for better and often for worse. But, you know, the number two and number three, you know, it's found in India and Nigeria. Like, Nollywood films are, you know, they find incredible circulation worldwide. So, you know, it's not as though there is a lack of representations of Africa on its own terms. It's just that Americans don't really feel the need to expose themselves to it, because after all, we're, you know, Americans are, you know, part of the Hollywood film culture and therefore at the top of the economic heap. So we can just go about our daily business, pretending as though these fictions are in fact reality. Let's take the case of Nigeria, for example. When you say Nigeria to somebody, you know, they automatically think of Boko Haram, right? They automatically think of sex slavery. And while that's obviously a major issue, and it's something that I'm going to be devoting a considerable amount of my time to, you know, to addressing, it doesn't at all define, you know, the Nigerian experience. So you go to southeastern Nigeria, and you know, the city of Calabar, it's a safe city. It's a beautiful city. It's, you know, it's a city that is, you know, that might even be kind of place that you want to go visit for leisure and for recreation. So Margaret's work in addressing this incredible deficit, I mean, I hope that it has all the success in the world, because it can make some incredible strides towards reframing how Americans and especially American Mormons conceptualize Africa as being a continent that is capable of both beauty and glorious things as well as incredible evil. And that's just the human experience.
Very good. Mukon, do you have any thoughts on this kind of misrepresentation, and any other thoughts on that?
No, what he says is correct. The people of Congo and throughout Africa need to be able to represent their country because they know how life is. They live it every day. And more of that needs to be seen.
Absolutely. So Margaret, let's jump in and talk about what needs to occur. So the film has not been created yet. You've done some B-roll and some of those things. Maybe you could talk about.
Yeah, we're ready to move into production. We don't have it cast yet. We've gotten most of the things lined up. We still need to fundraise so that we can do everything well. So Kickstarter will take us a good distance with that. We have 501c3 status in a company that allows us to do Kickstarter. So we have gotten some significant donations that have allowed us to do what we've done already. that we anticipate filming in May and finishing at some point the next year. We anticipate premiering it in Kinshasa. We want a worldwide audience to be present as we do this, because the goal really is to shine a light.
Yeah.
And so we'd like people to come and see what's actually there. We will go according to what's happening politically, but we are acknowledging the challenges. We anticipate that we'll be able to do something pretty remarkable in showing a different kind of Africa and having celebrities present. Mukan should talk about some of the celebrities who are supporting Miss Earth and what she's doing as her goal as with Miss Earth in finding Congolese representatives. Then we want to keep the film on the African continent for a couple of months before we even bring it to the United States. I'm a linguist's daughter, and so I'm fascinated by languages, and I honor them. I found when I went to Kinshasa that people speak French, except the older people, especially the women, don't. They speak dialect. Lingala was the most common dialect where I was. And that, my dad studied dialects. So that was something that I realized we have to honor the languages they speak. So we've already recorded a lot of the music. Emmy got together some of his friends who had been in the Revolutionary School and sang for us. And we've already put one of those through the studio, one of those songs. The songs are beautiful. They're haunting. Just lovely things. The drums in the Congo are just remarkable. We want to give an experience of the most fascinating and beautiful parts of the Congo as we do this film, without ignoring any of the hardships. But we hit, you know, we do the anthropology, the music, the language, as authentically as we possibly can, hoping that we can even start a trend where Garrett Batty, of course, has Freetown coming out. So that film premieres on April 8th. That will be premiering in the United States, but also in Ghana. So some big things are happening with LDS film. I hope that Garrett's got his in the Pan-Africa Film Festival, which is wonderful that we are widening the borders. For so long, if you had African Americans or Africans in an LDS film, the roles were usually quite small and didn't do a whole lot. That's sort of a token representation. It's now time to really go there and show how it is. But I wanted Mukon to talk a bit about Miss Earth also.
Yes, a little bit above Miss Earth. What we do is we basically promote issues, awareness about like environmental degradation, global warming, as well as climate change, how we can protect Mother Earth, and just remind all of us the plight faced by women in the Congo and throughout Africa. That's basically what my goal is with Miss Earth. And a lot of these girls that I will get to compete have no idea about the environmental issue that's going on in the Congo, because they don't think of that. The first thing they think about is food and surviving the war and not getting killed.
Yeah.
So this is very interesting for them to be able to represent their country by fighting for the environment. So it's new for them. They're not used to a pageant like this. So my goal is definitely for them, like Margaret says, to be able to teach us about their life and what they can do to change the environment of Congo, because that will help a lot cut down on diseases. We don't have enough doctors there. We don't have enough medicine. So that will definitely, starting with the environment, will definitely help us to start cutting down on health issues. That's major health issues in Congo.
Yeah, and I think that these examples are just so inspiring. We already talked about this need to allow people to tell their own stories and for us not going in just saying this is the way things are, but really being able to for us to learn from each other. And I think this project, what you're doing with Miss Earth, and I think these are just such inspiring projects.
The fact that Margaret is so committed to using the local dialects in the film, I mean, that speaks a lot to the film's commitment to being authentic.
Yeah.
In my field, you know, if you're going to be a historian of Africa in 2015, if you're not willing to learn an African language, frankly, more likely two at some point, then you should just pack your bags and go home. Like, you'll never be taken seriously. You might have been able to get away with it a couple generations ago, but not today. And similarly, any representation of Africa that does not pay, pay its dues towards the local cultures, the local languages, it just doesn't deserve to be taken seriously as a commentary on Africa. And for far too long, African languages have been neglected, and that's been what's kept a lot of Americans from being willing or able to engage African societies is we tend to essentially see it as, oh, South Africa is an English speaking country. Well, no, actually there are 11 official languages in South Africa. And that's just the very beginning. You know, in Nigeria alone, there are over 200 languages. So getting the language right, it's an essential first step towards producing a good commentary on African society.
And it's how you really meet the people. If I saw this over and over again with my father, where he would start off in, I would call it the conqueror's language when we were in Guatemala. He would start in Spanish and then say, if you don't mind, I will address you in Quechua, and then move into dialect. And I would just see people wake up. My father has been working with me on Lingala. Mukon is fluent in Lingala. I think that's the language of your home, isn't it, Mukon?
Yeah, yes. Yes.
So that's been one of my dad's joys. He's dying. We're in our last, who knows how long, but we've had 9 years of dialysis. And one of the joys of these last days for him is to help me with Lingala. I go to dialysis to care for him, and he'll have my Lingala lesson. I'd say, now learn this. You have to learn this before I give you the next one. and I will. I fully intend to become completely fluent in Lingala. It was fun when we were there. I had heard the missionaries talk about being called Mukele, which is white person. And so the first time I was called Mukele, I knew exactly what it was, and I just smiled. I had just a tiny bit of French, but they taught me a little Lingala. They taught me Kitoko Mingi. And when I would say that, oh my goodness, smiles and the children approaching, I felt as a woman that it was important for me to be with the women, to talk as much as I could about their lives. I had a meaningful relationship with Emma's mother, and it was a beautiful thing, because I had been able to help Emma in his marriage and trying to get him to get his education, and she came to me. We had been at her home, and we had just had so much fun. Even though I wasn't fluent, she couldn't speak a word of English, and I wasn't fluent in French by any means, and had three whole words in Lingala, but she managed to communicate. She said, I have always had great hope for my son, but I didn't have a way to fulfill it. And you to me are an angel, that you are helping my son in all the ways I wanted to. And I really do consider that we who have so much have a responsibility to look at those who don't. That's one of the challenges. There is huge inequality in the earth, and I don't think that's intended to remain. And it's cliche to say it, but it has to not end with recognizing there's inequality, but then looking at, all right, we have access to this, to this, to this, to the film industry, for example, which I think is one of the greatest ways of communicating information, of communicating health messages, anything you want to do. they don't have access to that right now. So one of my jobs is to provide access, to at least take steps to provide access, simply because I can. And I don't want to, I honestly would like to spend a good part of the rest of my life in the Congo. I've been tooled in, you know, I've got university degrees and post-grad, and I've enjoyed teaching at the university, but I'm ready to dedicate my life to helping other people, recognizing that they're every bit as intelligent as I am. They just haven't had the resources. So I want to provide resources.
Yeah, this has been so interesting hearing you guys speak about this. So for those of us who are wanting to support this project, you mentioned the Kickstarter campaign. Maybe talk a little bit more about what people can do to help this occur and help you be more successful in it.
Well, we're focused on Kickstarter now so that they can donate and then spread the word. That's one of our big things, to spread the word about what we're doing and why we're doing it. I think those are the two biggies. If people have lots of money and want tax deductions, that's also an option.
Perfect. Yeah, okay, so there is a link to the Kickstarter campaign that you can go to, and as far as we'll have links to where you can learn more about this project and to their website. Do you guys have anything else that you would like to make sure that the audience of Rational Faith's podcast can hear in regards to this topic?
I think we should get the date for Miss Earth.
Agreed.
Oh, the date for Miss Earth will be July 23rd through August 1st, 2015 in North Carolina. That's where the show's going to take place.
Okay. And for those who are wanting to get more information about that or to learn more about it, where would you point them?
So they just have to visit, to learn more about the Miss Earth pageant, to visit us at www.misearth.tv. And if they want to come to the show, just to contact us. We will put more information on the website. And to also contact us at missearthcongo@outlook.com.
Perfect. Russell, any thoughts, any last thoughts on this?
Well, you know, I was teaching African history over the past semester to a number of undergraduates. And one thing that was impressed upon me was, well, their Africa literacy was incredibly low. I also realized that this wasn't their fault. I mean, it was a failing of a school system that was not committed to presenting Africa as part of the mainstream narrative. So that being said, now that, you know, those who are listening to this podcast, we all like to think of ourselves as people committed to education, to furthering our light and knowledge. I would just encourage everybody to become more well acquainted with Africa on its own terms as a complex and multivariate place with, you know, where we understand that Africans are as capable of good and as capable of evil as anybody else. That, you know, they're neither saints nor devils, right? They're people, and they are as multi-layered as any American or any European that you know. Obviously, people want to learn more about the history of Africa in the LDS context, or the history of Mormonism in the African context, both ways. They can look at my book, For the Cause of Righteousness, A Global History of Blacks and Mormonism. And this book is really the first sustained effort at understanding the Ghanaian, South African, and Nigerian Mormon experience from the perspective of a historian. So for those who are interested in that, you know, you can buy it from the from Amazon or from the Greg Colford website, and as well as several bookstores throughout Utah.
Excellent. And closing thoughts from you, Margaret.
I am really excited about this next year. I loved the people of the Congo who I met when I was there in August. I am in touch with all of them. I'm monitoring the situation there. It has become much more settled over the last week, but it's a bit unpredictable. I really, so many of them feel like my own children, and to be able to return to the country, to be able to be with them, to be able to watch them learn how to do filmmaking, learn how to script their own stories. It is just a magnificent, possibility. My husband and I will probably start serving missions in a couple of years. He's not quite retired. He wants to finish a book. I think by the time we do that, I will have done a couple of movies in the Congo. We're planning on the Congolese interns making their own film during the time that we're teaching them and making our film. The fact that we're going to have some of the best filmmakers I know with us to help train is just exciting to me. That's my whole thing. I'm just excited about it.
Wonderful. I am so excited to kind of learn more about the project and to kind of see you guys progress and see this come about. So everybody go to the Kickstarter website. Margaret Mucone and Russell, thank you so much for coming on and participating on the podcast. Wonderful. So again, I wanted to thank everyone who participated on this panel. It was very fun to kind of hear about some of these differing approaches and to learn from that. So really grateful for you coming on. Brian, so for next week, what can people expect?
Next week, I think we're planning on continuing the discussions or interviews with scientists. And I have an interview with Steve Peck. A friend of mine and myself talked with him about evolution. Heck, if you look back, we have a podcast episode called Steve Peck, the Author. It's a continuation of that conversation focused specifically on evolution and how that works with his theology and all that. So we'll be doing that.
Awesome. And as always, if you've been listening to every episode, sometimes when we're announcing them, sometimes it does change because if something occurs like in the news or something that happens that we want to get to a little bit quicker, then we'll kind of push these off. But as of now, that is the plan to do the Stephen Peck interview. So watch out for that. And thank you for listening.
Good night and good luck.